Welcome again to the Cannabis Investing Podcast, where we speak with C-level executives, scientists, and law and sector experts to provide actionable investment insights and the context with which to understand the burgeoning cannabis industry. I'm your host, Rena Sherbel. Hi again, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Happy March. Today, we are being joined by John Paul, who joined Australis Capital as their CFO on the 1st of January this year. So a new position, and they just announced earnings yesterday, and including in that announcement was their upcoming deal acquisitions with Alps and Green Therapeutics, and how upon those completions, Terry Booth becomes CEO, and John gets into that a little bit today. John used to be CFO at Plus Products, which is a Canadian stock exchange listed hemp and edibles company that did business in California and Nevada. And I was talking to John just as an expert in the field, as you know, somebody with a ton of financial experience across sectors, also in the cannabis field. And in between setting up the interview and talking to him, he came on as the CFO. So super happy to have him on, specifically talking about Australis today and their place in the U.S. Cannabis marketplace, where he sees it heading, where he sees the general state of things heading, what he sees legislatively for banking, for, you know, things opening up, possible uplistings. And we get into a discussion that I feel is very interesting for investors in general. I know a lot of people are talking about it, asking me about it. What happens to MSOs as the legalization picture develops? What happens to their business model? Also single state operators. So a great conversation there. And we also get into CBD a little bit. A great conversation about the state of things in the US, specifically what's going on for Australis Capital and what's coming for Australis Capital coming up. And next week, we have two really great episodes. One in honor of International Women's Day. That's on Monday, March 8th. We're talking to Alicia Ratliff, who is CEO of Victus and a scientist, somebody that's worked very much across different disciplines in the cannabis field. A really, really important and entertaining conversation I have with her, and her business partner and husband, Chris Ratliff, comes on near the end to give us just a really great conversation about the state of the cannabis industry and all the things that we talk about that are frustrating. We get into more detail there about how things need to improve. And then next Wednesday, we have CEO Bina Goldenberg on from the Supreme Cannabis Company, and that's also going to be a great conversation. So stay tuned for those. But today, enjoy our conversation with John Paul. Hope everybody is doing well. Before we begin, a brief disclaimer. Nothing on this podcast should be taken as investment advice of any sort. I am Long Trulieve, Chiron, Isracan Biosciences, the parent company, and Air Strategies. You can subscribe to us on Libsyn, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and Stitcher. John, welcome to the Cannabis Investing Podcast. Really great to have you on the show. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you so much, Rena. Delighted to have the opportunity. It's exciting industry and great year, exciting times ahead.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I said on LinkedIn the other day that I think cannabis is one of the few living things that has had a great 2020 into 2021. It's really had a great year. And we were talking before we hit record that you've had a busy kind of end of 2020 into this new year. But before we get started with you are exactly, or you can kind of end this question with where you are currently. Your background, what brought you to the cannabis industry, how you got started, and kind of your paths along the way, your steps along the way.
Great. Yeah, it's, you know, I'd like to say I was really smart and the cannabis industry was a strategic choice. And, you know, I should say, you know, I came from Chicago, so it should have been came from Chicago. We had all these big MSOs in town and everything. And it's, but, you know, it's reality. It was the power of networking, and I just happened to back into it. There's a tech entrepreneur that I knew, and I had met with him about a year ago. And then suddenly I was at a Costco on Sunday afternoon shopping with my wife, and somebody calls me, and I thought that's kind of odd. Nobody calls me at Costco when I'm shopping, but I took the call, and he said he had a brother-in-law in California. They had a cannabis company, and they need help going public. So I said, hey, I'm interested. So he said, you'll get a call in an hour. And so it was about a 10-minute close. I'd worked on IPO before. I said it would be fun to get to do another one. You're never sure. Kind of like going to the Super Bowl. You're never sure if you, unless you're Tom Brady, you're never sure if you're going to get a lot of opportunities. But so I dove right in, had no idea what I was getting into in the cannabis industry. But it's, so when I flight, timing was good. I took a plane the next day and down to the airport. I called up a friend in Chicago I knew who was doing some capital raising in the industry, and I asked him, what should I know? And he said 280E. So for all I knew, 280E was a highway. So I kind of said, what's that? He said, taxes. And you know, to see that we were taxed at the gross margin level in the cannabis industry, that was kind of like a rough baptism there. So I kind of knew it was going to be a very different environment pretty quickly on.
Was he trying to caution you, like, if you can get through 280E, then you can succeed in the business? Was he trying to steer you away from it, or was he like, listen, this is the...
No, he was delighted that I was coming into it. You know, my background has been a lot through my career. I've been CFO with hyper growth companies in some very fast growing industries, toy industry. I was in early days of generic pharmaceuticals, early days of wireless telecom, you know, some interesting things in healthcare and distribution, other areas. So yeah, he thought, you know, I think he was encouraged to hear, you know, another person coming into the industry. You know, there's a shortage of talent. So he was actually very encouraging. But
yeah, it's interesting. I feel like the people that were not initially the ones to see cannabis or to get into cannabis, they kind of brought their friends who are like, they've got good business sense. They're going to be good stewards of capital. I'm going to bring them in. And that it seems like that's how a lot of people like yourselves with that background came into the industry.
Yeah, and it's, but you know, there are, certainly it's, you know, I even had a thing with, you know, we are in the process of recruiting for a corporate controller in my current role. And you were talking with a recruiter earlier this morning, and he was kind of saying, yeah, you get some of the finance people to the altar, and then they kind of back out at the last minute. They get nervous about cannabis, and they're not sure.
Is that still happening?
I think I was open-minded about it, but there were a few friends who kind of laid the guilt trip on me, kind of like, you know, oh, you're going to be a drug dealer. How could you do that? But then there's another thing. I may have had a friend who was a liquor distributor, and he kind of said, well, you know what? The industry is better with me in it than with me not being in it. So
it's interesting. I mean, I'm not surprised that people were saying that to you when you got into it, but I'm surprised that people are still kind of gun shy and still thinking of it this way, especially like what's happening in the States.
Yeah, you think, I mean, you know, one is, you know, no other industry I can think of that has such incredible growth prospects. I mean, everything says it's going to double in the U.S. within 4 years. Not many industries can say that right now. And certainly, you know, we've been deemed by the government as an essential industry. And, you know, we had a good year despite the pandemic. And also, you know, what I did not realize coming in is, you know, what it's doing for people on the medical side. Now, obviously, you know, we can't make claims with the FDA. And, you know, I hopefully see a day that testing and research can be done so we can really prove out. But certainly the plant is doing a lot of good for people. So I'm very encouraged. To me, that was a kind of a real bonus that came to it, because I like being involved in situations where you can be passionate about the company and everything. I mean, and no, to me, the why is just incredible, you know, in terms of what it's doing for people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And it's nice when you can bridge purpose and profit together. It's always a good thing. I'm curious. So you were at Plus Products. You just recently moved on to Australis. I'm curious, though, you know, one of the things you did at Plus Products was bring them public on the CSE. And I'm curious what your thoughts are. You know, that was kind of the root of choice back then. And now it seems like the SPAC is the choice right now. I'm interested in your thoughts as a veteran of the industry and somebody who's done this, literally done this, what your thoughts are on that change and what your thoughts are on the, you know, the high number of SPACs right now in the cannabis market.
Yeah, great question. A few different topics. Certainly there have been the ebb and flows in the capital markets. And, you know, from the early days of Plus prior to my time, it was difficult raising private capital of any sort of size. So actually, probably one thing that worked out in my favor was that because it was so difficult, you know, the early investors were able to negotiate some pretty interesting terms. So one of the terms in the Plus deal was that some of the early investors had a kind of a very short-term liquidity event. In other words, within a couple years period of time, by October 2018, the investors had to get liquidity either through a public offering or through selling the company. Plus, didn't want to sell the company, so the only way to really get liquidity was going through through a public offering. And fortunately, at that time, though the markets had improved, I mean, we're looking at, you know, the fall of 2018, summer of 2018. You know, big private capital really was not coming into the industry yet. I mean, we did do a $10 million private raise, but no, the path for a bigger amount of capital was through the CSE. So, you know, and then of course that window kind of shut and they really pulled back. So the, you know, and then suddenly, so really, if you look over a long period of time, the really only action of any substance has been these SPACs. So from the standpoint, you know, the SPACs, kind of my view, it seems like they're more SPACs that have been raised devoted to cannabis than there are sizable enough deals. I mean, you need to be at least $100 million. And no, there have been some interesting deals that have been done, but there's still some money out there. I think is, you know, it's got some work to try to find a home. I mean, there's not a lot of, maybe not a lot of situations that are valued at $100 million or more. And if you have to end up patching together a number of different companies in the SPAC, that's a very difficult thing to pull off. I mean, when I was CFO of the pharmaceutical firm, we acquired 5 distributors of generic pharmaceuticals across the country and put them together into a nationwide network. So, and they operate in different regions, but even though they're in the same industry, trying to get them together on the same page afterwards, I mean, they're like 5 different personalities. It was kind of really like herding cats trying to pull that together. So I think it's tough to do a combination deal. I mean, I wish the facts well. I think it's great for the industry that, you know, they do provide a path for companies to effectively go public, but you have to be of a certain size. And, you know, many companies just aren't in that type of position. So the more viable thing for them could be trying to maybe, you know, get acquired by an MSO or so. You know, the other thing that's just kind of curious about Plus with the going public process is, you know, and for us and others, well, it seemed like he had a number of cannabis companies going public on the CSE that otherwise normally would not be public company. So it can become a burden there too, because it's not cheap. And certainly one of the surprises of being a public company was the very high cost of directors and officers insurance. And we're fortunate to be able to have it. You really need to do it. But the reality is there are very few carriers that are doing it. And there's really only effectively one carrier of any size. And they are pretty particular about it. They even came out to see us for our renewal, and they said we're only one of three companies in California that they would underwrite. So they don't want, you know, they've got a lot of exposure, so they only want to take on, you know, some of the quality firms. So I also think, too, you know, you have to be very careful about how you deal with the investors and analysts in the public market. And, you know, from my past experience, having been involved with a public offering with a pharmaceutical firm, you know, I was coached by private equity investors to not put out forward reaching a statement. Let the analyst really own the particular numbers, guide them if they seem to be getting off track. But, you know, I saw, you know, too many cannabis firms out there throwing numbers out that just were going to be unachievable.
Do you think that there's going to be like a reckoning with this recent spate of SPACs, that there's going to be some that are going to fall and some that won't even make it to market, and or some that are going to try to, you know, as you said, it's hard to put these parts together. You think some won't be able to do it, do you think that reckoning is coming kind of this year?
I mean, I think, you know, they have their, they have to get something done 18 to 24 months. So some have a kind of a time limit there. And, I hope I'm wrong. I hope everybody gets to do a deal. And, you know, it's good for the industry, but I have a feeling some will struggle. And although, you know, the reckoning may not be, you know, so terrible, it's just that, you know, maybe the money gets returned to investors. And it's not as painful, I'll say, as some of the days of reckoning that have come about over the past year or so because of convertible debt that was due and you had to fall off in valuations. And some of those days of reckoning were very painful for some underachieving company there.
Yeah, absolutely. We saw kind of that kind of come to terms. It's not pretty. So catch us up. You said between us talking and right now you've come on as the CFO for Australis. Talk to us about how you made that decision, why you decided. I was wondering if you had retired after you left Plus. I wasn't wondering in the language there, if you were looking for something else.
Yeah, I mean, they kind of said, you know, Plus, yeah, I was retiring, but, you know, I was kind of retiring from Plus, but not from the industry. I felt, you know, it's a great industry. You know, we talked about wonderful why in terms of what it's doing for people, great growth prospects, and, you know, it's an exciting industry, very challenging, and I think, you know, I've been blessed to have had the experience at Plus and made connections with so many great people in the industry, so many terrific advisors that helped us at Plus. And so, you know, I felt, you know, I've got a special expertise and would like to parlay it some more. And so, yeah, I did have a few opportunities to take a look at. Certainly, I mean, COVID may have slowed it down a little bit, but yeah, it was a hard decision, but ultimately I think it really came down to is, you know, betting on the CEO who I felt would have the strongest growth possibility. So the opportunity to be able to partner with Terry Booth, you know, one of the founders of Aurora, and, you know, what he did up there to build that company, move that along, and certainly he's a... I really enjoy him, very dynamic, very, very engaging, very visionary. And I think he's going to be a great CEO to work with as we explore opportunities to expand our presence in the U.S. and beyond. And, you know, I think we're off to a good start with a couple of the acquisitions that we've announced.
I want to talk about some of those acquisitions, but I'm curious because Terry's coming from Aurora and from the Canadian space, kind of one of the things that I think people would take Aurora to task is for overextending themselves too rapidly. And then they had to shut some things down. Is that something that you guys are taking with you at Australis, like what you're learning from? Is that something that as CFO, you're kind of being charged with in terms of, you know, responsible growth, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly had, I'd seen that in some other industries too. And, you know, we certainly saw in the .com, we saw in some other areas. You know, Terry Booth is very clear about saying, no, this is not Aurora 2.0, what we're doing. And I think it's trying to find ways where we can expand without being very capital intensive there. So I think, you know, certainly lessons learned. You know, not just Terry, there are other CEOs up there in Canada who kind of went through that particular wave. So,
absolutely.
But I think, you know, he's got great expertise, and it's, lessons learned. And I think, incredible market here in the U.S. with even greater growth potential. And, I think with his relationships and what we're doing and a couple things, it's, I think we'll have a very achievable strategy that will hold up well.
So how are you looking to grow? I know that you guys have BAM, which is an MSO. And I want to talk to you about, you know, your thoughts on the MSO and the U.S. But you mentioned kind of, you know, this is a more responsible strategy. So how are you looking to grow this time?
Well, I think it is, you know, we certainly want to take advantage of opportunities in states that are coming on board. And I think a big difference too is where maybe before it's, you look at me up in Canada or even, you know, some of the earlier days in the U.S., it was, you know, kind of a land grab. Let's get the real estate, you know, don't care about the cost, you know, get the volume up and we'll rationalize it and we'll make it profitable later. Whereas now I think we're under a tighter screen. You know, we want to do deals that are only creative from the get-go there. And I think, you know, with the expertise that we bring in and the relationships and with the way that we could structure deals to be kind of more of a partnership or so type arrangement, you know, I think that's very possible. And I think, you know, we'll see that right off the bat with what we're doing with the two acquisitions that we have coming on board.
The ones that you have upcoming, like that you haven't announced, you mean?
No, I mean the ones that we already have announced. I mean, you know, Alps is a consulting operation. Thomas Larson, I mean, very impressed with him. And, you know, he's just doing great work around the world in agricultural and cannabis and helping clients oversee the construction of greenhouses, glasshouse projects. Be profitable right from the get-go should be, and then with Green Therapeutics, you know, that gives us a grow operation locally, and it's they've got some good brands and, you know, things we can do there to help them grow and develop.
So I'm interested in your thoughts. I mean, you've seen it, right? You've seen the industry, you've seen other industries grow. You know what the kind of recipe is by and large. I'm curious what you see for the picture in the U.S. space, right? There's so much positivity and opportunity out there.
No, I think it's, there is a lot of positivity out there. It's, you have these, it's a unique industry because every state is very different in how it turns to how they approach licensing and everything. So, you know, there's the unique challenges there, but clearly, you know, it's great to see a number of states coming on board. And so great opportunity there. And there's certainly the demand, I think the latent demand from consumers. So very incredible opportunity there. It's, it remains to be seen. And also, you know, I think it's going to be positive from the legislative standpoint. I think it will still take a while. I mean, I think the ultimate legalization, I still think that's a ways off. And then you look at, I mean, you know, turning on the banking side, I like to really, sometimes people lump it together, but I like to split it out between the commercial banking and investment banking. To me, commercial banking should be a no-brainer. You know, you ought to let, you know, banks be able to serve cannabis client, and we need to get this cash handling out of the system. You know, it's a security risk. I mean, you know, from the government standpoint, it also, you know, it can be leakage with the cash. You lose track of how things I mean, it should help the tax revenue from the governments. And, you know, it's such an incredible burden for some companies in the industry. I mean, even for ourselves, you know, it's, you know, we're looking to get banking established for Green Therapeutics. And there are a number of options within Nevada, but, you know, some of those firms are kind of tapped out in their capacity right now. Good institution, but just the way the banking is right now, they can only take on so many cannabis clients with at any particular point in time. So you know, I'd love to see the cannabis, you know, commercial banking, the investment banking, and full access to the public markets. And you know, it'd be nice for the U.S. firm to be able to be on the NASDAQ. You know, grateful for all that's been done through the CSE to provide a vehicle, but really, I mean, we'd like to have the access to the U.S. Markets. I mean, our trading volume has increased quite a bit, you know, with our changes at Australis, but I mean, the volume in Canada is many times larger than what we have on the OTC market, and it really ought to be other way around. So. It'd be great to see it get off schedule one. Be great to see research open up, but you know, maybe that would be a low time coming. Certainly, you know, you have countervailing forces, so you know, a lot remains to see how will big pharma treat this. You know, very powerful lobbies or so, but to me, I mean, the commercial banking side, that should be a win-win.
It definitely should be. I'm curious, like within all the unknowables in terms of the industry, right? Like it could go this way, it could go this way. It seems like the rational thing will play out, but we're not really sure how that will come about. How do you see it in terms of, do you think the MSOs have a leg up as a business model? Do you think single state operators, some could come in like in 2 years time, in a year time, and say they've been building strength, whereas the MSO model has kind of been growing too much, let's say. Do you have an opinion there in terms of?
That's a good question. That's, I think, yeah, one of the interesting topics, you know, because, you know, there's certainly, I mean, you see in some other industries, it's either good to be big or it's good to be small and be kind of a niche. And sometimes it's the people that are kind of in the middle that really kind of get squeezed there. I mean, I think it's an interesting question about the single state operator, maybe the smaller NFOs, you know, how well can they do? And you know, it's possible, but it remains to be seen. I mean, I think the interesting thing will be, you know, for the big MSOs, and then let's say, you know, that glorious moment comes when it becomes federally legal. Now, Senator, there's the opportunity for the big MSOs to rationalize their operation and get more streamlined. I mean, the unfortunate thing in all this is that without being able to have the interstate commerce, you know, you're building up a very inefficient structure in these big MSOs. They're doing the best that they can and trying to be as lean as possible. But you know, it's unlike, you know, what's going on in any other industry. I mean, so big CPG company is not build plants in 50 different states. You know? And, you know, there's such a duplicity in the banking and the administrative and other parts of it. So, it would be interesting to see how will the MSOs rationalize over time when that moment comes. And it's probably like, you want to keep expanding, you want to keep building, but you don't want to do so much, you know, particularly as you get closer and closer, I think, to legalization, you know, the value of a new license kind of has a shorter and shorter shelf life there.
So do you think the moat is the knowledge and the experience, or you think kind of, I guess we'll see?
Yeah, it kind of remains to be seen. I mean, I think, you know, the big question mark is how soon. I mean, I think we part say maybe you don't want it too soon because you still want to get yourself in the best possible position for when that moment comes. And then there's still even the question, you know, people think, well, even like, you know, a state becomes legal, but it may still be a while before things really open up. I mean, I even saw it some of my early days of the generic pharmaceutical industry. I mean, the Wackman-Hatch bill got passed in 1984, which greatly simplified the approval process for generic drugs. You no longer had to do the human trials. You just had to prove that you were the equivalent of the branded drug. But it still took, I think, a few years for the FDA and the industry to kind of sort out the mechanics along the way there. You know.
Well, speaking of sorting out the mechanics and the FDA, I'm curious what your thoughts are about about CBD. Do you think that that's worth getting into at this point in terms of how that's being handled?
Well, you know, Astralis has had, you know, a hiccup trying to get into a CBD venture there. I mean, I think it's, yeah, I mean, I hope the FDA, you know, they kind of step in and, you know, establish some guidelines. You know, the worst thing is when you have uncertainty. It sounds like, okay, give us the rules of the road, and we can play ball within this. I'd say it's certainly, you know, it's doing good for people, it has potential, but it's also, you know, there can be benefit to regulation. With regulation, you know, you ultimately lead to where consumers would not, you know what they're really getting with the products and that, and you know, be the option for more testing and, you know, try to see. I mean, I know at Plus, when we came out with the CBD line, we felt there were a lot of products out there that were too low dose to be effective. So we purposely came out with the higher dose gummy that we thought offered a greater benefit to the consumer. So, you know, I'm hoping that can be all sorted out. I mean, I view, you know, the FDA can be a very, you know, could be a very positive influence. And I hope we look at it that way as opposed to it being sort of an adversarial relationship.
So talk to us about where you see Australis in the next year or 2 years, where you see it growing in the ecosystem.
You know, there's so many, you know, I mean, ultimately I see us in many states and participating and kind of as a, you know, certainly a cannabis firm and kind of like a, you know, multi-state operator, but may operate in a fashion that doesn't require the full investment. Now, you know, Terry Booth will be coming on as our CEO. You know, it's not going to be official until we complete the acquisition of ALP. So, you know, there's still a lot of things to be sorted out. You know, there's such a vast array of opportunity that we have. So, you know, it's a little hard to be a little more specific, just that, you know, right now, you know, we're focused on getting the two acquisitions completed that we announced. Getting Terry on board, and then we'll certainly, you know, explore some of the different possibilities and move from there. But, you know, I can say for sure, I mean, we'll look very different than what we are. We will clearly be a revenue-producing company where, you know, the first couple of years of history, Australis really hasn't had much in the way of revenue. So all I can say, we're going to look at very different. You know, exactly how it will be, you know, it's hard to say, but, you know, very much, you know, this is, you know, it's a bet on the management team as opposed to being able to, you know, point on some, you know, very tangible things right now at this time.
Which I think is so much of the cannabis industry. I, at least my experience with it is betting on the management team. That's so much of what an investor's job is, I think. I mean, obviously the due diligence, you know, is required, but the management, I think, is such an essential part and something I'm always encouraging listeners to do. So it'll certainly be interesting to keep an eye on. When do you think the CEO gets confirmed? When do you see that getting announced? Do you have a vision for when the acquisitions close or a hope for when the acquisitions close?
Well, I mean, hopefully, I mean, we, you know, our target is try to have these, certainly have these acquisitions closed in the first quarter of this calendar year, and I would expect that we would have, you know, both would close by the end of February. Now, of course, it's, No, ALPS is just not plant touching. It's a consulting organization, so they're not the kind of same lower regulatory thing they have to go through. Now, anytime, of course, you're acquiring a licensed operation such as Green Therapeutics, it takes time to get the state to approve the licenses. So, just like MSOs or others have to do with their acquisition, you close the acquisition of the company, but it's not fully complete until the state approves it and the license gets transferred over. So, that could take 6 months or who knows how long. We're confident it will, go through. Green Therapeutics has a good history, but I just know these things take time.
Absolutely. I think anybody familiar with the cannabis industry knows that things take time, and then all of a sudden, boom, things change like that. It's quite a conundrum.
Yeah, one of the fascinating things about the industry, and that's where, particularly, I wrote an article for the Illinois CPA Society about, encouraging, finance people. That's a great industry to come in, but you got to make sure it's right for you. I mean, you have to have a high tolerance for ambiguity. You have to be okay with, you come in and during the day and think you're going to do this, and your day gets can get pivoted very quickly on you because of things happening. So you have to be nimble, you have to be flexible, you have to be adaptable, and that can kind of go against the grain of the nature of some people. And it doesn't mean that one thou is right and one thou is wrong, but clearly, as I've seen in some other fast-paced industry, you got to be able to. You got to keep wired into what's going on. You got to be prepared to move quickly.
Absolutely. Have you seen some of that burnout of people that thought the industry was going to be one way and were like, well, this is way too kind of ever-changing for me?
Haven't seen much. I mean, I think we're still so much in the early stages of it, but, that's an interesting thing. I have seen, I've only been in it about, 2.5 years or so, but I have started to see some people that kind of did a stint in it for a bit, and then they decide to, kind of pull back and said this maybe is a little too crazy for them.
Maybe manage a library or something like that.
Yeah, but it's not for me. This is my second rodeo, and I'm all in.
Very good. John, well, it was a pleasure talking to you, and thank you so much for taking the time. And I'm excited to see what happens with Australia. So I want to keep in touch and see what's happening there. And we'll definitely keep our eyes and ears open for what's next.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity, and certainly, and I encourage, people who are listening, who are thinking about getting in, it's a great industry. And fascinating opportunity. I think it's a fascinating point in time, and it's a great opportunity, so strongly consider it.
Thanks so much for listening to the Cannabis Investing Podcast. Subscribe or follow us on Seeking Alpha, Libsyn, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, or Stitcher. And we'd really appreciate it if you could leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps other investors find our show. If you have feedback or questions, we'd love to hear from you at RENA+CANPOD@SeekingAlpha.com. That's RENA+CANPOD@SeekingAlpha.com. Thanks so much for listening, and see you next time.